Wisconsin's initial vaccine rollout was criticized for being one of the slowest in the nation. But over the last couple of weeks, the supply and delivery of vaccines has improved. As of yesterday, the state's seven-day average rate of vaccination stood at over 6,000 shots per million residents per day. That's the highest rate in the country. And next week, the Department of Health Services will start opening community vaccination clinics, the first in Rock County. But some local officials and health providers say there are still logistical problems, especially knowing how many doses to expect from the state and, in turn, how many appointments to schedule. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gotten one or both rounds of the vaccine? What's your experience like getting an appointment, going in for a shot? If you work in healthcare, getting people vaccinated, what's gone well so far? What has gone less well? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ajay Sethi is an epidemiologist and associate professor of population health sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Ajay, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. I'm glad to be here.
Well, a vaccine rollout in general can be pretty complicated. What are your thoughts on how it's been going in Wisconsin over the last couple few weeks?
Well, initially, it certainly got off to a slow start, but you know, those are growing pains that I think every state was experiencing, or at least most of them. The last couple of weeks have been good, and Wisconsin is doing quite well.
Now, part of the problem lately, it seems that we see reports of people having appointments that then get canceled. If I'm a healthcare provider, I don't know necessarily how much vaccine I'm going to get from the state this week. And it sounds like if I'm the state, I don't know how many vaccines I'm going to get from the federal government and from companies this week. Can you talk about some of the just the logistical challenges of knowing how many vaccines you're going to have and how many people you need to get into the office?
Yeah, and to add to that, the federal government sometimes is not sure what's in the pipeline coming in from the manufacturers. So everybody has to be patient, and this is sort of the phase that we're in. You know, down at the ground level where vaccines are being administered, supply is the issue. You know, the vaccinators make requests of the state. Those requests are not being met because there are supply issues. And so when a health system makes appointments, you know, people who have those appointments, you know, should be expecting potentially some reschedules because the supply simply didn't come in. And it's frustrating, but it's sort of the phase that we're in right now.
Taking a much wider view, I mean, there are growing pains, as you said, but for a disease that we didn't know about before late 2019, the notion that we have functioning vaccines that we're putting in people's arms this soon into the game, can you talk about the historical nature of that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a record time going from developing a vaccine candidate to getting shots in arms. To have all that happen within 10, 11 months is a record. What people should realize, though, is that the science behind the vaccine, you know, has been decades in the making. And actually, I'm going to put in a plug for the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the very pioneering study by John Wolfe back in 1990, published in Science, showed that you could inject a strand of RNA into a mouse and you could start getting proteins produced as a result of that injection. And the very last paragraph in that paper, he says, this could be a game changer for vaccine development. And 30 years later, look where we are.
Right. And this is a case where instead of going from 0 to 60 on a vaccine, we're going from, I don't know, 30 to 60 once we could get the genome of the virus and that mRNA information that you were just talking about. It really lowered the time it took to get that virus, that vaccine into place, right?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, the 30 to 60. And the sequencing of the virus within days of the sequencing becoming available by Chinese scientists, you know, the vaccine candidates were developed.
We are talking about the COVID-19 vaccines out there, the impact they could have on the spread of the disease. Ajay Sethi is with us from the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's an epidemiologist. You can join in with your questions, maybe your experiences, at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. We've got Jerry with us in Muskego. Jerry, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Jerry?
I recently received my vaccination at the biggest hospital in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Everybody knows who it is. And it was a complete nightmare. I tried to avoid crowds. I tried to social distance. We were herded into a hallway, two lines on a small hallway where you could just walk down the middle, shoulder to shoulder, the person behind me, the person in front of me, nose to nose. Nobody cared. We had masks, but no social distancing. I called patient relations, nothing. No return of the phone call. They don't even want to talk about it. But come on and get your shot.
Jerry, thanks for the call. So, Ajay, I think even in the vaccine lines, we want to keep up masks. And as Jerry was saying, he didn't see in this instance social distancing. The same rules apply, even if we're getting the vaccine, right?
Yeah, of course. We don't want to have crowded situations when we're vaccinating individuals. Same with COVID testing. You know, when there's long lines for COVID testing, people obviously need to be physically separated.
Thanks a lot for that call. And that reminds me, when we get that first vaccine, if we're getting that series of two, or even maybe after the second one, we don't want to rush out and throw all precaution to the wind just yet, as I understand it. Can you talk about why that is?
Yeah, so the vaccines have been proven to prevent severe disease. It will prevent people from having symptoms so severe that they require hospitalization. So those were the endpoints defined in the clinical trials, and those trials never did study how they affect transmission. And so we have to assume that there is a risk that despite being vaccinated, you can, you know, come across somebody who has the virus, potentially pick up the virus. Now, you may not experience symptoms, or if you do, it might be mild, so you can avoid hospitalization, but you may pick up that virus, and perhaps it could replicate and then be passed on to somebody else. And I think that's the main thing. Mitigation is still really important, whether people are vaccinated or not. And the science is being worked out as to how effective these vaccines are at preventing infection and transmission. We should expect some information related to that within the next few weeks or months from the manufacturers.
And thanks again for that call. And Ajay, what do we know about how long it takes from when you get that shot, even the second shot, and when it kicks in with its full protection?
Yeah, for the two vaccines that are authorized now, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, about 2 weeks after that second dose, you are likely to have that level of protection that's needed to prevent that severe disease.
Let's go to our callers again. Jeff is with us in northern Wisconsin. Jeff, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Jeff?
Just that I'm a teacher up north in Wisconsin, and I feel very fortunate that the nurse at the school called me and said I had an appointment for the first shot if I wanted it. And so I went in, and then she called me again last week and said my second dose, you know, would be last Friday. So I went in, and I just wish that every school in the nation had you know, completed all their shots by now, because we have. And just wanted to give a shout out, you know, to the school I'm at that is on the ball and fortunate, I guess, to have been able to do that. And it's been great. You know, I was fortunate not to have any effects the first shot. And the second shot, I had a little bit of, like 10 hours later, I felt that night a little bit of flushing and a little bit of shivering, but after about an hour, I kind of felt normal again. And even one of the 85-year-old teachers I talked to today said she had zero effects after her second shot.
Wow. So, Jeff, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Now, Ajay, even if we said, okay, yes, all teachers are in our current priority zone right now, there's just not the supply to get everybody, even in the categories we're trying to, that are at the top of our list, right?
Yeah, that's right. So right now, 65 years and older are sort of the priority to vaccinate, in addition to the ones prior to the 65 plus. So the frontline healthcare workers, long-term care, police, fire personnel, and teachers, educators, childcare, that's next in line. And so, yeah, around March 1st, maybe a little after, when supplies start to kick in, we can get to those next groups.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Ajay Sethi, professor of population health sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at Wisconsin, how the state's doing on COVID-19 vaccinations, and what to know as we go through the process of getting the shots out there. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gotten one or both doses of a vaccine so far, or do you have an appointment? Have you been one of the people who's had an appointment canceled because of lack of supply? And if you work anywhere along the supply chain of getting those vaccines to people in a healthcare setting, call in. Love to hear what you're seeing. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation. Take more of your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Ajay Sethi, epidemiologist and associate professor of population health sciences at UW-Madison, looking at trends in the state's vaccination numbers and what to know about the vaccines themselves. You can join in with your questions, maybe your experiences giving and or receiving the COVID-19 vaccines. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Go back to your calls now. Dave is with us in Madison. Dave, hello.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Say, there are a lot of rumors going around, and, you know, is there any truth to this mRNA in this shot having any effect on the DNA in your cells, both in older people or younger people?
Dave, thanks for the call. This is a rumor that does fly around there, Ajay. What do we know?
Yeah, there's no effect on somebody's DNA in the cells. The DNA is in a sort of an area of the cell, sort of behind a membrane in the nucleus. The RNA gets injected into cells, begins to produce proteins, and then degrades pretty rapidly. It's a pretty fragile molecule. It's why we have to have the exceptionally cold storage, because it's so fragile. So there's no truth to the idea that the RNA in the vaccine somehow interferes with the DNA in cells.
Thanks for calling in with the question at 800-642-1234. Colton joins us next in Milwaukee. Colton, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. So my question is, now we have all these different vaccines coming out, and recently the AstraZeneca one was pulled over in Europe, South Africa, because it wasn't protecting against the variant. So my question is, do you expect that with all these new variants that COVID is going to turn into this like flu-like virus, where there's going to be like an annual prediction on which strain is going to become more contagious, and then there will be like an annual vaccine? And if so, will masks and social distancing be kind of indefinite then because of these new strains?
Thanks for that call. The AstraZeneca one is not one of the ones approved, at least not yet in the U.S., Ajay. But can you talk about that question? Are these viruses going to be enough of a moving target that we're going to have to keep tweaking the vaccine from month to month, maybe year to year?
Yeah, so right now we're lucky that the vaccines that are authorized for use work against these new variants. And, you know, they're in the United States, and the U.K. variant has been detected in Wisconsin. The vaccines work against those variants. The South African strain, you know, it was the Novavax vaccine that released, that manufacturer released some data to show that there was some suboptimal effects on the South African variant. It wasn't down to zero. It was just not as effective. And some of that science is still being worked out. That's why it's so important for us to indeed vaccinate as quickly as we can. And with that mitigation, prevent the spread of new variants that are in the country, in the state. And as far as updating the vaccine, certainly, especially the RNA vaccines, the technology is there to edit that sequence to keep up with the strains that are circulating and then update the vaccine. Now, we're not at that point yet, but there's certainly people who are sort of thinking about that and potentially planning for that.
Thanks a lot for that call, Colton. When it comes to being a target for vaccines, how do you compare the coronavirus with something like, as Colton mentioned, an influenza, where we've got lots of strains out there and we're trying to predict which ones are going to be coming to the United States in any given year?
Yeah, with the coronavirus, you know, this SARS-CoV-2 virus has a different sort of evolutionary process. It kind of just slowly evolves, and then a mutant or a different strain, a variant, can emerge. With influenza, you know, there's a different process to develop new strains every year. You can get sort of tiny mutations that occur that force us to develop new vaccines every year. Every now and then, you can get a real mixing of genes between different influenza viruses, the last one being 2009 with the swine flu. That's novel. We don't expect novel influenza viruses every year, but they can certainly happen, as did recently. But both of these viruses do evolve. A lot of viruses do. And you know, as scientists, the job is to keep up with predicting what the next strain might be and making sure our vaccines are effective against them.
Let's go back to our callers. Valerie is with us calling from Burlington. Valerie, hi.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say I'm a clinical instructor of nursing, and I have the opportunity to take my students and have them be involved in, you know, helping put this coronavirus to rest and helping, you know, end this pandemic. And I think we all just have to remember this is brand new for not just the scientists and the doctors and everybody, but it's new for everyone. And we have to give ourselves some grace in regards to getting this vaccine out there and putting an end to this pandemic.
Valerie, thanks a lot for the call. So Valerie working with her students on this, Ajay, but saying some grace and being good together, good to each other as we go through this process might help us all a lot in the long run. What do you think?
Well, one, I want to thank Valerie for the work that she does. And there are a lot of people who are trying hard to beat this pandemic, to manage it. And everybody just needs to realize, as Valerie said, we're all on the same team. The virus is what we're all need to focus on, you know, reducing that spread and keeping ourselves healthy.
Thanks for that call. Laura joins us next in Madison. Laura, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest can speak to this. In Wisconsin State Journal newspaper on Wednesday, I read that UW School of Education senior receives an injection of the vaccine, and that so far the university's administered 4,000 and so first doses and 2,000 or so second doses. As a diabetic with high blood pressure, who the state health department hasn't even decided yet whether she's going to be 1C, and then my last reading of website from the state, university students weren't on the list. I'm at much higher risk for terrible outcomes and have lived since March 13th, haven't been out to a restaurant or a show or anything. And I'm curious if you know why university students are getting vaccinated.
Laura, thanks for the call. I haven't seen that particular story, Ajay. I know in general the priority is not for university students, but for someone at high risk like Laura, what do we know about where they are on the priority list?
Yeah, so right now, they're in the future will be vaccinated. Right now, the age is a criteria at 65 and older. And so underlying health conditions is not on the list at the moment, but it should be soon when things start opening up to the general public. When what Laura says about a university student being vaccinated, there are students, you know, who are part of frontline healthcare personnel, so that may have been the case. There's also, you know, when vaccines get thawed and are, you know, shots in arms are being delivered daily, sometimes vaccine appointments are missed and vaccinators are finding themselves potentially having to throw out doses because they have a few more doses than appointments fulfilled that day. And so some vaccinators will have sort of leftover lists. And, you know, you never want to throw away a vaccine dose because those supplies are so precious. And so if somebody who you feel like isn't eligible for the vaccine is getting it, it's probably through that leftover list. Because if that person doesn't get vaccinated within the next 30 minutes or hour, the vaccine is going to get tossed, and that should not happen.
Thanks for the call, and good luck to you. In our last couple of minutes, I want to look ahead at the future a little, Ajay. We've got two approved vaccines out there in the United States now. thoughts that we might have a third and maybe a fourth before too long. What are you watching, and how much does that then impact that the supply side of the equation here?
Yeah, so the Johnson & Johnson company applied for emergency use authorization from the FDA last week. And so the expert panel's reviewing those data. And on February 26th, we'll be meeting. And it's expected that this will be a third option, a third vaccine that's available. And this one's exciting because it's a single dose. It's 85% effective against severe disease, keeping people out of the hospital. And 66% effective after for any symptoms, really just after one dose, which is really good. It adds to the sort of options for vaccine and will increase supply because it's a third manufacturer.
And what do you have your eye on? Just in our last 30 seconds, what are you really watching closely right now, Ajay?
Supply is increasing. The Biden-Harris administration announced yesterday that they're going to bump up from 10.1 million doses per week to 11 million. So we'll see a little bit of a rise going to states, and that's a good thing. That'll stay steady for a few weeks, and then we're hoping with Johnson & Johnson coming online and hopefully Pfizer and Moderna supplying more vaccine to the federal government and the community vaccination site and Walgreens kicking in through a separate program, 18,000 doses per week, that we can see a little bit more expansion in the weeks to come.
Ajay, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you, Rob.
Ajay Sethi is an associate professor of population health sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He is with us to talk about what's behind an improvement in Wisconsin's vaccination numbers and what to know as we go through the vaccination process.